financial literacy, and the human condition. Welcome to Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor, Dr. Francis Raham.
Oh, I love it.
Okay, we're doing a kids show today. Could you tell?
Oh, that's cute.
How
That
old
is
are your
cute.
kids? Remind me of your kids' ages again.
7 and 6, Atlee and Madden.
Perfect. That's what I thought. This is for 6 to 10-year-olds.
Okay, perfect. Talking money.
I was inspired by a 7-year-old over the weekend, so we have a good story. Hi, it's Francis. I just wanted to take a minute to thank you for watching this video. If you're catching us on YouTube, please help us help others by clicking like, subscribe, and all notifications so you don't miss any videos. And check back for the next video. I think you're going to love it. Thanks again. For more information, you can visit us at hugyourmoney.com.
Welcome to Financial Fitness. I'm Jess Tyler, along with the Money Doctor, Dr. Francis Raham. Hi.
Hi, Jess. How are you?
I'm good. And I see the kitty cat in the background with the pirate hat on.
Now, yeah, I know we're on radio, but I am in Pablo's Pirate Cove. Pablo is a pirate cat. And
okay.
Pablo is with us today to help talk to kids that are 6 to 10 years old about money.
Okay.
Check out Pablo. Isn't he cool?
Pablo is really cute. And I thought for a minute it was your cat, and then I realized it's not.
No, Pablo is one of Lola's friends.
Okay.
Lola's not that great with money. You know, she kind of hangs around the office and listens
Lola looks
to what
a little
I say.
spoiled, I'm just going to say.
She is a bit spoiled, and she likes her treats, boy. I'll tell you what, when she
I'm
wants
sure.
a treat, she does not care what it costs.
All right. So from the age of about, from where to where would you say is when you start talking to kids about money?
Well, this show is about kids from 6 to 10.
Okay.
I think that's a good age to start talking to them about money. They haven't learned any terrible habits yet, I hope. They're watching their parents very closely and other adults around them. And
Yeah.
they pick things up by osmosis, right? They pick things up because they see other people do it, and that's what they emulate. So, yeah, one of the things I hear from parents most often is, my parents never taught me about money, and I want something different, something better
Yeah.
for my kids.
Well, my Atlee is 7 and Madden is 6, and as I like to call them, my little broke besties.
Okay. Now, why are they always broke? Do they get an allowance or what?
Yeah, but they're the broke besties because they always have a great idea for a great adventure that they're not paying for. So, you know.
So they kind of help you.
Well, you know, all kids
spend
think their
your
parents
money.
Are rich. They all think their parents are rich. So it's interesting, yeah, because you want them to still have fun, but then also, like you're going to say, I'm sure, know where that money's coming from and how much it costs and all that kind of stuff.
Yes. So, you know, doing this on radio is different than when people see a YouTube video. So let me just say that we will talk about this storybook with Pablo the pirate cat that we've made that helps kids from 6 to 10 years old learn about money and what money is and how to save it and spend it and share it wisely, whether they get an allowance or they don't, you know, things that kids get right away. Simple concepts about interest, like using jelly beans. When your jelly beans grow in a jar, that's like having interest. So we're introducing grown-up topics, but we're doing it with kids that are very open to these ideas. So, you know, as a grown-up, we're like, no, protect my kid from money. Don't tell my kid about money. Money is evil. Money is difficult, blah, blah, blah. No, they need to learn how to do this. And believe it or not, they're going to end up teaching you about the magic of money and the magic of interest. So, yes, I think we do hit on topics of all of the things that you've talked about, but especially why isn't there just always more money? Why do parents run out of money? How is money an infinite thing? And so we do talk about that, and we teach them, even in this little half hour storybook thing, we teach them how to decide. We teach them about the word budget, believe it or not, very, very briefly. Like, you know, smart pirates like Pablo make a spending plan before they spend all their gold. We call that a budget. Okay.
And this is the way to go. Like you brought up jelly beans and then the cat, like if you make it fun, they'll want to learn.
Yes. Yeah, it has to be fun. And I think by the time we get to be adults, we're convinced through a number of things, you know, our experiences, what other people have taught us, all of that, to be afraid of things. And one of them is money. And empowering children to not be afraid of money is really one of the best things you could do for them. But a lot of things try to teach money by teaching them with math. And I will tell you, in this entire storybook, there's one math example, and it's very brief. It's a pirate's map, and they start at age 7 and they end at age 18, and along the way they see some things like if you saved 10 jelly beans or $10 and never did anything else, just went to sleep, but put it in a place where it could grow interest, another term which we introduce and explain, in a month you'd have $11. Year, you might have $31, and after 10 years, guess how much you would have? And they get to guess, but guess how much it is after 10 years? If you put $10 in a jar or in a bank and saved it with interest and never added anything to it again, how much do you think you'd have after 10 years?
Maybe $100.
How about more than $2 million?
What?
That's the power of compound interest. Okay.
That can't be right. Wait a minute. Say that
At
again. If you put
No,
how
no, now
much?
you have to understand it's at 10% per month. Okay. These are ridiculous interest rates, but we use them with
Got it.
children. We use them with children because we don't want to explain compound interest at 10% a year. They need to see something magical happen to encourage to save. Okay. So I was inspired to do this. I must say, I was inspired to do this show, and I actually started building it while my boyfriend's family was here. He has a wonderful granddaughter named Bianca, who is 7, and she saw that I was building a video for adults, and she said, "What are you doing?" And I said, "Do you really want to know?" Yes, she wanted to know. Kids are so sophisticated these days about technology. So I started showing her the video I was building, and she looked at me and said, "Francis, that's like you're building a movie." And I said, "That's exactly what I'm doing." She grabbed my computer, literally grabbed my computer, you know, put it on her lap and wanted to ask an AI agent that I was using for some of this, excuse me, some of the stuff. She said she wanted to ask it something. And I said, "Well, what do you want to ask it?" And so she started typing it in. She said, "Do you do this for kids?" And that's where the idea was born. And then so we started, I had already created the treasure map. I had already created Pablo the pirate. So you can see his little chest of gold here. Looking,
Where is everybody going to be able to find this, by the way?
they'll be able to find it everywhere. I'm going to put it up for free, my favorite price, right? So that we can start teaching these kids. So YouTube, Amazon, Apple, anywhere you get your podcasts, if you can get a video podcast, you're going to see this, and we'll post it. And all public access stations, I think we're on more than 100 stations now. So if you don't see it on your public access station, call your local public access or community television station and say, "You know, I know this person, the Money Doctor. She's doing these great shows. You got to get some on your station." And there's one this week about kids with money. So tell me some questions or some things you want to know about teaching your kids with money.
Well, I would just say the thing that they are most confused by, I think this is all kids. If you're showing them actual hard money, they'll know, like, okay, when that money's gone, you've spent it, it's gone. But they don't necessarily understand a credit card or a debit card.
That's
You know,
right.
they just think that they're not understanding you're depositing your check into the bank and using your own cash because a card looks like just this fantasy thing that you can use for whatever.
That's a great point, really great point. And because we're tech forward here at Hug Your Money, right? We attack that in this video. So we talk about where did money come from? You know, at one point, people were trading mushy bananas and chickens or whatever for whatever they wanted, right? There was a barter system. And then we needed a way to trade more fairly. Because what if you're trying to trade your mushy banana for somebody's toy car? And they don't want your mushy banana. They can't use your mushy banana because it's going to expire. It's gonna get old, and nobody wants it after them. So what do you do? So we develop this system of money. Then we go from that to There was a day when people used everything to trade money, salt, cocoa beans, whatever, jelly beans, right? Today, we mostly use coins, paper money, and plastic and digital. So we show coins, paper money, plastic. We don't show a credit card, but we, plastic, it represents money, and a phone with a glowing dollar sign on it, right? And we ask the kids, what do you see used most often for money? How do people earn money? What do they, how does money happen? And so we do go into most people earn money by some sort of a job. They go to work and they get paid for that. Kids can even earn money by doing some things like raking leaves or walking the neighbor's dog, or some kids get an allowance, right? And so we talk about how money really happens, why there's not an infinite amount of it. So one of this pages or slides says, why isn't there always more money? And it talks about you have to make choices. You only get so much money per week if you work, or you only get so much money in your allowance. So you have to make choices. So then we talk about budgeting and what budgeting means, and are you dividing it between your three jars? So we can talk more about that too. But yeah, it's really fun to get into the mind of a 7-year-old or an 8-year-old and see what they perceive money, as doing. One of the slides is, what do we need money for? And we talk about you need it to do things that you need, like buy clothes and food, or maybe help someone. There's a lot of kindness in this video about sharing.
Oh, I've got to tell you a little story on that topic, just
Oh,
really quick. It
great.
just happened this weekend. I was with my little Madden, and we were walking. We were walking along the in one of those inside malls, and there was someone sitting there playing music, and
Yes.
had a sign out said, "Please leave money for food." So I gave him $1 to go put in the jar, and then we get a little bit past it, and he looks at me and he says, "That made my heart feel good."
Oh.
I was like, "Oh."
As a matter of fact, that's what one of our slides says. It says, when you give, and it talks about where can you give? You can donate to, all these places, right? You had a place in need, a friend, something like that. And it says it doesn't have to be big. A little bit goes a long way. It's about deciding what to share. We even talk to them about how to decide how much should go in your spend jar, your save jar, and your share jar. And it's up to them to make the decision. So we're starting to teach them about balance, but we give them suggestions, things like, well, one way to save, right? One way to divide your money might be to save 50%, or to save 50 cents for every dollar. I mean, to spend it, excuse me, to spend 50 cents on every dollar. Maybe you save 40 cents and maybe you share 10 cents, right? And then we talk to them about what are you saving for? Is it something big? Is it something small? So, yeah, I would love to hear kids' stories. If anybody wants to write in to me with a wonderful child story about money, especially if it's funny, oh my gosh, kids really do say the darndest things about money. But it just cracks me up. And this little girl just saying, "Do you do this with kids?" I mean, she did not care that when I was showing her this adult video, it's about real money stuff, right? And she didn't care about the concept. She just cared that I was teaching somebody about something she wanted to learn about and could it be adapted for children. And she was off to the races, Then
Oh,
she
I
wrote
love
all
that.
kinds of riddles. Tell us a riddle about money and do the, tell us a joke about money. About 3 hours later, her grandfather was saying, "You've done this to her. She tell us another riddle." But yeah, kids are just so open to this stuff, and I reiterate, I think parents do want to shield their kids from it, but it's because you don't want them to experience the scariness of it, right? I mean, we even introduce debt. I mean, really, really briefly, like a little tiny bit about how interest works, right? It can work for you or against you. So
Right.
you start to learn, hey, interest is a magical thing, but what am I going to do with it? Am I going to earn it or am I going to pay it? And what does that mean? What are you sacrificing? Right, do you get to
right.
jelly beans or not?
We'll talk more about this. This is such a great concept and idea. First, let me get your phone number. I
Sure,
know the
it's
kitty cat.
413-413-773-3333.
Or you can go to hugyourmoney.com. We'll be back with part two of Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor, Dr. Francis Ram, next on WHMP.
Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor is underwritten by Franklin County Technical School. We build futures. Visit fcts.us or call 413-863-9561.
Welcome back to Financial Fitness. I'm Jess Tyler, along with the Money Doctor, Dr. Francis Ram. Hi.
And Pablo, the pirate cat.
You got Pablo's Pirate Cove, which is where you are broadcasting from today, which I love. And we're talking about talking to kids about money.
We are. And just for those people listening to us on radio, Pablo is a gray and white cat. Pablo is actually Bianca's real cat in real life. And he's got this great little pirate hat on. And he's sitting in this wonderful dark cave with an open tunnel at the end. There's a lot of metaphor here. He's got
And a
a
box of treasure next to him.
box of treasure, gold coins and a treasure chest, you know, and the other typical props for a pirate cat cove, right? Like a spyglass, etc. So Pablo is a very smart cat, and you can tell by looking at Pablo that he likes his treats.
He is a little furry, we'll say. Fluffy.
Pablo is a little fluffy, and he's got a little attitude. And the attitude is because he's guarding his gold. So
Yes.
actually, he's guarding your gold, right? So Pablo is here to help tell this story and teach the lessons that a 7, 8, 9, 10-year-old kid and some 6-year-olds, your 6-year-old's probably going to get this right away, you know, want to pick up about money and how they can be empowered by it and use it for good. Because that's what our message is about at Hug. I'm sure they can find videos where they use money for other things, but for us, I want them to learn how to use it for their own benefit, to care for people they love, and to share with others when it's affordable for them, not at their peril, but you know, when it's good for them. And as you brought up, your Maddie said, was it Maddie that said it?
Madden, yeah.
It was Madden, yeah. Your Madden said, you know, when they gave a dollar to somebody who was playing music and had a jar open or whatever that said, please donate, after they gave the dollar, I thought you might say, and then he said, oh, I wish I still had that dollar to spend on a toy or something. But no, Madden said, that made my heart feel good.
Yeah. He's really sweet. He said when he's an adult, he's going to come back and give him 100 if he's still sitting there. I was like, okay,
Oh
I don't know
my
if he'll still
goodness.
be there, but he's just really sweet like that.
That's really sweet. And that is a perfect kid moment.
Yeah.
Guess how much you would have to save to get $100, you know, at a certain time. And that those are easy figures and kids get them. And that's why, you know, we have this treasure map in there. We allude to it every now and then. But that's what I was saying is, you know, trying to get a kid that's 7 years old to understand why they should save some money doesn't really mean anything to them.
Right.
It's just money. It's there to get what you want. It's a form of exchange. But when you start to equate that with, do you want to buy an ice cream? Are you going to save up for a bicycle? Do you want to maybe save up for something even bigger, a camping trip or something like that? And we start to teach them that budgeting is really just about, or saving is really just about patience. And you get to practice it. And every time you get a dollar, it's another chance to practice. Right?
Now, where do you start though with, like, do you simplify it a lot? Cause I'm just thinking about, like, all right, say you're breaking down for them that here's what my paycheck is, and we have to pay this much towards the mortgage or this much towards groceries. And so I get that you're being honest in that way, but it's just interesting to me because growing up, if you had asked me what my parents' salaries were, I would have had no idea.
Yeah. And these kids won't either. And
Okay.
talk to them about things like mortgages and rent and groceries. And we do that to try to explain ourselves to them. This is why mom or dad is saying no, because we have these important things, food, shelter, clothing, right?
Right.
But they're still looking
Necessities.
at, yeah, they're still looking at us going, I mean, remember when you were 7, did you know what a
Yeah.
mortgage was?
Right.
Oh, you know, you barely remember to clean your room for your allowance money if you got any, right?
Yeah.
So yeah, it's good that you have these conversations and that they hear these words and they start to log them. But you might as well be telling them, you know, this planet is Mars and this planet is Jupiter. It's still very abstract. But when you start to equate them with things that they recognize, we have to pay the mortgage. That's like when we have to pay for gas in the car to take you to soccer, right? Make it something smaller that they can understand. Like you can't get to soccer if we don't stop and put gas in the car. And that requires some money. But a mortgage is way too abstract, right? A loan is way too abstract. When you talk about sharing, we reduce it to jelly beans. We talk about interest. If you had 10 jelly beans in a jar, sealed it up tight, went to sleep, and tomorrow you looked and there's 11, that's how interest works. And you just let them guess. It doesn't have to be the right answer. I don't care what they say.
Is that just because you're getting them curious about money?
You just want them to be enthusiastic and warm about it. You don't want them to be saying, well, I don't want to do this anymore because I got the answer wrong. So many adults tell me that money is about math. They're not good with money. They're not good with math. There is a slide in here that says, what if I'm not good with money? Shows a, Pablo and a child with appropriate expressions. And it says, you don't have to be a math whiz, to do this. Money is about, learning how to exchange things, right? For instance, we use these three jars right from the beginning. I think the first two slides are a pirate map, and with Pablo guarding the gold. And I think either the second or third slide introduces three jars: spend, save, share. And the
Oh,
whole
this is
thing is,
so, it's such a good idea. It's so fun.
yeah, it's fun. I think I had fun doing it. I mean, look at me. I'm in Pablo's Pirate Cove with special lighting so that I look like I'm in Pablo's Pirate Cove, right?
And
So
Pablo really does look like he has an attitude, by the
Pablo's got it too. I'll tell you what, we searched long and hard for Pablo. He's actually an AI cat, but isn't he perfect?
I'm a fan of Pablo.
Yeah, Pablo's perfect. So when you do that sort of thing and kids start to get it. Okay, you could say to your kid, okay, here's a jar of jelly beans. We're not going to talk about money. We're going to talk about jelly beans, right? Here's your jar of jelly beans. Here's three more empty jars. Save, spend, share. Put some jelly beans in the save jar. That's like eating them, right? You're going to, I mean, if, sorry, in the spend jar. That's
Spend
like
our,
eating them, right? You're going to spend them. They're going to be gone. Are you going to wish you had them tomorrow? That's a way to start making a spending decision, right? If you're going to wish that you had them tomorrow, maybe you ought to save some of those tomorrow. And so then they can take some of the jelly beans out of the spend jar and put them in the save jar. Oh, look, so now you have these you can spend today, and tomorrow you'll still have these because you planned ahead. You did the start of a budget, right?
Now, what if you have a kid that says, "Nope, I'm good with it." Like they use those three jelly beans to buy three Matchbox cars, and they're like perfectly happy with that. So you're not getting the save idea really through to them.
That's right. Well, it takes practice and it takes, no, you have to be willing to teach the lesson. You cannot expect a child to learn about money and loss if you're just going to continue to fill the void. If they buy three cars with their jelly beans today, now this isn't long term. You can't do this a month later, go, hey, last month you bought three cars with those things, right? It's got to be quick, right? Buy those three cars today. Yeah, okay, I'm going to buy them. Maybe when as soon as you get home, you look at the spend jar and it's empty and the other two are empty. What's going to happen if tomorrow you want to buy another car? Oh, you're going to have to wait for
Until
your
you save
allowance,
more.
or you're going to have to earn some more money, right? You're going to have to do something to refill that jar. The jars themselves, just, jelly jars, whatever, mason jars, the jars themselves are really great because they're clear. You can put anything in them. You can let the kids choose. What do you want to save? What do you want to spend? What do you want to use for these tools? I don't care if they're stones from outside. Let them choose, right? But it's the idea of dividing them. And so once you have some, maybe you get the kid to the point where, okay, I have some for spending today, and I've taken some of those beans out and I've put them in the next jar for tomorrow. And then you could say, don't you have a friend, that you see at school or that you like to play with? Yeah. Wouldn't you like to share some of these jelly beans with them? Yeah. Oh, well, which jar are you going to take them from? Are you going to spend less? Are you going to save less? Are you going to take some from each? You don't care what the answer is. All you care about is that they take the beans out of one jar and divide them into other jars in any percentage they like. They have to do it, they have to see the results in order for them to learn. So positive reinforcement all the way, unless you're trying to teach a lesson like yesterday you spent those. Remember we talked about this? So now you don't have any more beans until the next time you get paid from doing a chore or getting an allowance or whatever. And they have to learn it. You have to do this at least once, folks, at least once, and probably repeatedly. You have to be able to hold your ground. They are not going to die if they can't buy another toy car tomorrow. I don't care how much they cajole and kick and scream, right? You're teaching a life lesson here, just like any other life lesson. And if you can do it kindly, gently, and consistently, your kids will grow up to start telling you by the age of probably 9 what you should do with your money.
I know they're so advanced now, right? Like just the fact that she knew to go on ChatGPT and how to do that is crazy.
Yeah, she didn't know ChatGPT, but she saw me working in an AI agent and she saw that I was building a movie. And she said, at that stage, she didn't know anything about it. And she just said, "Do you do this for kids too?" What was really charming is along the way, like I was right with her building this, right? I didn't turn her loose with an AI agent, right? There you go. Somewhere in here, she made the shift, the mental shift from talking to a computer to talking to Pablo, who is back in North Carolina. Started asking him questions like, "Pablo, where did you put the hat?" And Pablo, "Where did you hide the jars?" I bet to this day, well, to this day, I bet she's home still talking about those jars because Pablo told her where they were hidden. And one of them, she got hints, right? And one of them was someplace cold near the peas. So she was telling her parents, "When we go home, I have to look in the freezer near the peas, that spend jar, or that save jar." It's a really important lesson to teach kids. They will have fun with it. They will want to do more and more of it. I mean, I had to sort of back her off, like, "Okay, no more right now. Pablo's tired, you know."
Yes, Pablo needs a little nap and a fancy feast.
Yeah, that's right. But Pablo does things like buy treats and guard goal and curl up on your lap and tell you when you're doing great. And yeah.
And hopefully share a little with Lola, right?
And I think he would share a little with Lola. Yeah. Yeah.
Right, once again, where can we get the where can we get this?
Gosh, are we there already? Yeah, you can get it at any place you get your podcast. By the time this show airs, I think it will be live. But in case you don't find it there, you can email us, excuse me, at info@hugyourmoney.com. And we'll send you a link to it. Completely free, no advertisements, no, "Hey, but this is great, go to the next level." This is me helping you teach your kids about money.
Oh, that's great. All right, you can go to hugyourmoney.com, but of course, I need your phone number as well.
Of course, it's 413-773-3333.
Oh, so fun. All right, we'll be back next week with another edition of Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor, Dr. Francis Ram on WHMP. Thank you.
Thank you, Jess. Underwritten by Hug Your Money. Hug Your Money, where financial wellness gets personal. Will you help us spread the word about financial fitness? Please like, subscribe, and choose all. Thank you.
Financial literacy and the human condition. Welcome to Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor, Dr. Francis Raham.
What's the argument? Tell me that.
Oh, just really quick. My car's got about 145,000 miles on it right now. But I paid it off last year. So I've had like a year of no payments. She thinks I'm rolling the dice every time I drive it because a big repair could come up. And I say, well, sure, it could, but I've saved a year's worth of payments. So that's where we are.
Hi, it's Francis. I just wanted to take a minute to thank you for watching this video. If you're catching us on YouTube, please help us help others by clicking like, subscribe, and all notifications so you don't miss any videos. And check back for the next video. I think you're going to love it. Thanks again, For more information, you can visit us at hugyourmoney.com.
Welcome to Financial Fitness. I'm Jess Tyler, along with the money doctor, Dr. Francis Ram. Hi.
Hi, Jess. How are you?
I am doing good. And what are we talking about today?
Well, you know, you might have a big decision to make. Your car might be on its last legs. You might be, you know, have a lease that's ending and thinking about, you know, are you going to lease again? What are you going to do? So should you lease again? Should you buy something new? Should you buy something used? Maybe you're thinking you're going to save up a little money and buy a used car. And that's really the heart of it, isn't it? Is you need a car.
Yeah, it's really interesting too, because I was just having this conversation slash argument with my sister yesterday. So we'll talk about that coming up, and you can tell me who's right.
Oh, well, that would be very interesting. Okay.
I'll put you in the middle of some family drama.
Why not? I'm kind of used to that. So you need a car in some way. You're just trying to be smart about it. But between the monthly payments, the stress level involved, no matter how happy you are about it, and all the opinions that are flying around, your sisters, the dealers, whatever, it's really hard to feel confident in your decision, I think.
For sure. And then also right now with the tariffs, like, is it a bad time to buy? Like, you know, that kind of weighs into it a little bit too.
Everything weighs into it.
Yeah.
But the fact of the matter is, this is one of the biggest decisions that you'll make and one of the most emotional decisions you'll make. It wasn't that big of a deal when a car cost you, you know, a used car was $1,000 and you could get a beater, and a new car was, you know, $5,000, right? That wasn't that big of a deal. But now cars are costing, you know, a quarter or 20% of what a house costs. It might be your house down payment
Oh, for sure.
You've been
Yeah,
trying to build forever just to buy a car.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a big decision now. I did recently have someone call me with this decision, even though they watched our videos that were about, would you buy a used or new and do you lease or not? You get firsthand how emotional this purchase is. So, you know, you smell that new car smell. You picture yourself driving off the lot. The thing that we need to do is slow this down just a little bit. I know you might have to make this decision fairly quickly. Sometimes people's cars just,
on the last leg.
they just die, or they just
Yeah.
completely, they're just, you're at the mechanics and whatever repairs need to be done are so catastrophic that they don't make sense to do. Now your plan of I'm going to save up and buy a car, or I'm going to get a car when this car has 20,000 more miles on it 1 year later, is out the window, right? And so now you have to do it. So today's show is not about telling you what you should do. Did you hear me, Jess? This is not about telling you what you should do. It's about giving you a way to see your options more clearly so that you have the tools you need to make whatever choice ends up feeling like the right one for you.
Okay. So when should you think about buying versus leasing, or is it always a bad idea to not? Is it always a bad idea to buy new, I guess is my question.
Didn't I just say we're not telling you what you should do?
Yes, but you know, there's always that temptation for a brand new car, but then you hear, like, as soon as you drive off the lot, it depreciates 10 grand or whatever. Then it just seems like that's a bad decision, although it's tempting.
That's exactly right. And what you've just said in a nutshell is why we're talking about this today. So we're going to address all of that and give you the tools you need to have so that you know, is it a right decision for you to buy new or used, or to lease or buy, okay? Because buying a car is not just about the money, right? It's about safety, reliability, pride, right? Sometimes status even, right? Sometimes people want that car. It is exciting, you know, to get a new car or to think about buying a new car. But it is also, as I said, really emotional. And so even though you might love that new car smell and you might love the idea of telling all your friends what you bought and pulling up to work and having people come out and look at it. I mean, if we go through all of these things, right? I drive.
Yeah.
I know what cars are like for me, you know, but it's also about fear. And that's what was driving a conversation I had very recently with a client who was in this position. They had to buy a car. Well, people say they have to, and there's another solution. No, this guy had to buy a car. Okay. And so the fear of, well, what do you fear? taking on too much of a loan, right?
Right.
Getting stuck with a lemon, making the wrong choice for your future. Like, you thought it was okay now, but something happens a year or two down the road. You don't feel so good about it. So most people don't make their car decisions with confidence. They make them with a sense of urgency. If you think about every time you've bought a car, I mean, nobody wants to go and pay $48,000 for their car. Nobody wants to do that. So you put it off as long as you can. Or you go the route of a lease, which we'll talk about too. Is one better than another? No, they're different than one another.
Okay. I will say too, just to add to the emotion part, part of it I notice, especially with the younger generation, I'm just thinking about my son, it's the new tech in each car. Like a brand new model always has some cool upgrade. So it's wanting that. So it's not necessarily, you want it to be brand new. It's because it's kind of like a CD re-release where they add a new song. They add like one cool feature and all of a sudden you have to have that model.
Yeah, well, I'd love to get somebody who, deals with social aspects to talk about that, because I think what you just described is where we've come in our country or maybe in the world about wanting that. We used to say keeping up with the Joneses. Nobody says that anymore for a number of reasons, probably, but wanting to be on the edge all the time, always wanting to have the newest, best, always wanting to be first. Greed really leads, especially here in America. That sense of urgency I was talking about, coupled with any of those things, even without greed, right? That's where it gets really expensive. That's where you make choices you might not have made otherwise. So, the leasing thing can be very appealing. Right? It's a lower payment, lower monthly payment. You still get that new car smell, right? But with a lower hassle. It's really easy to just go to a dealership, and as long as you get approved for your credit for the lease, you can lease a car without much down payment, et cetera, et cetera.
Well, let's pause on that for one second because something you said was really interesting. I've always heard that leases, you have to have great credit to be able to do a lease. So it feels like it's an unfair advantage for people that, have really great credit scores.
I've not found that to be true necessarily. What I have found to be true is that I told myself I wasn't going to beat up on dealers because they're doing their job, right? And they fill a necessary void. But let me paint a scenario. You go to a dealer, they sense that you have a sense of urgency or not. I don't want to make them out to be villains, right? But you find a car you like. Oh, I want this with all the bells and whistles. It's more car than you can afford monthly. What are your options? The guy selling you the car is going to say you can buy less car, right? Which you don't want because you've fallen in love with this wonderful rolling piece of art. Or we can get you into this car with a lease. You'll lease it. And here's the mantra. You're only going to pay for the part of the car you use. You're only going to pay taxes on the part of the car that you're using. Okay?
It's always a catch at the end too, because most often you go over the miles and then you have a choice of either paying this big amount of money or buying the car outright or getting stuck in another lease. I shouldn't say stuck in because you might want to be in a lease.
You might. I love how I have an idea planned out for these shows. It's always loose, and then something you say makes me think about something else. There is a little thing I just thought of. This is like a little money doctor moment where I tell you the things nobody tells you, right? And most of them come from personal experience. Everybody says, "Oh, you got a PhD in finance, you know everything." Believe me, most of what I'm telling you comes from the school of hard knocks, okay? And this is one of them. I leased a Mini Cooper the first year they were out. Well, I leased that car because it was the first year they were out, and I was afraid of bugs, not insects, problems. Okay. And so I thought, well, I'm going to lease it. And then if there's a problem
Well,
with it, yeah, then they're going to handle it. But I also drove a lot of miles. And so a lease was not an optimal thing for me to do. But in digging into the fine print, which is what I always recommend people do, and asking the right questions of a dealer who actually, steered me correctly, what I learned was I could take the lease with a 15,000 mile a year number right now, but if before a certain date, and I don't remember what it was, I think it was 2 years or 2.5 years into the lease, it was quite a ways in. If before that date I found that I was driving more than those miles and I was worried about getting penalized, up until that date, I could add more miles. I had to pay for them.
Oh, I've never heard of this.
I know, this is why I'm telling you, I had never heard of it either. But I called the dealer and I said, look, I'm at, however many miles and I'm going to go over. I want to buy these miles. And at that time, I could buy them for something like a quarter a mile. And the government was reimbursing me like 48 cents a mile for my work, right? So it totally made sense for me. I did, in fact, buy more miles so that I wouldn't pay the higher penalty. It's kind of like getting gas when you return your rental car.
Rental
Are
car,
you going to put the gas in or are you going to let them do it, right? So I put the gas in. I bought the miles. And it saved me a fortune. And then I liked the car well enough that I sold that car outright. I bought the lease out. I sold the car. I actually did well on it, believe it or not, because it was a hot car that everybody wanted. And I bought another car. I actually bought another Mini Cooper. But anyway, you could check your lease contract if you're already in one and see if that's a possibility. But I digress into tips. So the thing that people are often missing is what you're talking about. At the end of the lease, you're faced with the same problem. Now, you might have a penalty if you just want to walk away from the car. Sometimes it's $500 or $1,000 if you're not going to buy out the car. There are nice things about the lease, like you know what the buyout will be, and you know that some repairs are going to be covered and all of that. But the tough thing is you're always making a payment. And again, I used to believe this, okay? I used to, because I could get a write-off for my business. Most of our tax write-offs are gone now, but at that time, I could get a write-off for my business. I could drive a nice car for not much money, and I had driven clunkers a lot of my life. I am mechanically inclined, not a mechanic, but I'm mechanically inclined, and between myself and my friends, we could always kind of keep them running, right? But I was tired of it. I just wanted to get in a car, turn the key, have a reliable car, and go somewhere. And it was at a time in my life where I really couldn't afford a huge payment. And
And
so
for the most part, with the lease, they will fix it if something goes wrong on it.
the
So
basic
that's a
stuff
little bit
is,
of peace of mind.
that's right, the basic stuff is covered, but so would it be on a new car with a warranty. You'd have similar coverage. So anyway, I was leasing and I got trapped in that place that people get trapped in long before I ever did what I do now for a living, right? And I was thinking, boy, every time I lease, my lease is up and I go on to get another car, my lease payment goes up. Well, of course it goes up. The price of cars is going up. So if you're going to lease professionally, right, like a professional student, if you're going to do that consistently, you need to be prepared for how much your price is going to go up over and over and over again. So there is a way to win the game, of course. And we'll talk about exactly what that is, to get the best of both worlds. But you brought up the major points. You're often locked into a mileage limit. If you go over, you pay dearly on it. Massachusetts on a lease, because we're in Massachusetts, and in many states, you still pay sales tax on the full monthly lease payment. So a lease payment of $300, we're at 6.25% tax. That's $318.75 because of the sales tax, right? But you don't own that car. If the car gets totaled, or somebody steals it, you may need to have gap insurance. There's a lot of things to cover. So we'll talk about that, but also whether to buy new or used and how whether your sister or you are right about this decision.
All right, let's get your phone number in the meantime.
Of course, it's 413-773-3333.
Or you can visit hugyourmoney.com. We'll be back with part two of Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor, Dr. Francis Ram, on WHMP.
Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor is underwritten by Franklin County Technical School. We build futures. Visit fcts.us or call 413-863-9561.
Welcome back to Financial Fitness. I'm Jess Tyler, along with the money doctor, Dr. Francis Ram. Hi.
Hi, I'm sharing with all our listeners all the stupid things I've done in my life about my and why I'm qualified to help you figure this out, believe it or not. Yeah. So just before the break, we were talking about leasing and all the things that come along with that. And a couple of things that, I started to talk about were things like gap insurance. So most leases require you to buy gap insurance. Okay. So if your car gets totaled while you own it, and it's worth more than your insurance is going to pay, they require you to have gap insurance. Now, if you buy it through the dealer, or you probably have it and don't even know it, believe me, if you believe it or not, if you've gotten a lease, it's probably packed right into your little payment. So take a look at your contract. If you get it through the dealer, it's going to cost you $400 to $800, probably slapped on top of your purchase or on top of your lease price and factored into your payment. If you get it privately through your insurance company, it's probably between $2 and $8 a month.
Oh, wow.
But you could
That's good to know.
save
Yeah, you could
yourself a
save a
little money
bunch.
there on gap insurance.
Now, if you've already got a lease and you go back and check, can you take the gap off of that and then go through, or no, you had to do it at the
I
beginning?
think it's already in your lease payment. I bet you
Okay, got
ask. I
it.
mean, there's never any harm in saying, "Hey, I learned this." It's a phone call, or an email. You could
Yeah.
always ask. Yeah. So just knowing those kinds of things ahead of time can save you a lot of money. Okay. Let's talk about buying, especially new versus used. Now,
Okay.
I'm going to tell you what you need to know, and I'm going to tell you how it works in hug land. Okay. Because you may be very surprised to find that you can afford more car than you thought and pay it off sooner. Now,
Okay.
one of my favorite things to do is to help people solve this car problem in a way that they're really happy. All of that being said, there are times when you simply need a car, it has to be reliable, and you cannot afford the payment on something new or used that is in very good condition. And in those instances, I sometimes will recommend a lease for somebody, but with the caveat that you keep the lease payment. I told you there was a way to win this game. You keep the lease payment as low as you possibly can. You don't buy your dream car on a lease. You get a car that is adequate, that will get you through the next 3 years. Maybe you don't love it. It doesn't have every bell and whistle, but the lease payment is $200 a month or whatever, and you can afford it. And you might be able to start from that point and plan forward to make a down payment, improve your credit, get to the next level. But don't lease and forget that you leased unless you want to be stuck in a payment. And I'm going to use that word, stuck in a payment forever. Okay. And that's really the way you win the game. You never lease more car than you could afford to buy.
Okay, quick question
Possible.
on that. Should you put money down in a lease?
You'll be required to put some down with some leases. There's no way around it for some leases, unless they
Okay.
have like a zero down lease thing. And should you know what? Putting money down on a lease, does check how much it lowers your payments. It usually doesn't lower your payments by enough to change your life. And the money you're putting down, if that was your emergency cash reserve, that might change your life. So balance that out. Yeah. So whether you buy new or used, okay, used cars can make a lot of sense. For a number of reasons. I mean, we all know what they are. They're lower sticker price. There's less depreciation, more flexibility, but there's a trade-off, okay? The interest rates on used cars are often higher than on new cars. And the terms for your loans are often shorter than on new cars. So the payment on a used car can be fairly similar or closer, can ease in closer to the payment on a new car because of those things. Because of a lower interest rate and a longer term on a new car, sometimes those payments, otherwise people wouldn't buy them, can be appealing compared to a used car. Okay. Plus, repair costs might hit you a little sooner on a used car. With a new car, you might get a lower interest rate, 7-year loan, whatever, right? So you get more manageable payments. At first blush, that longer term loan can seem scary. Right? Now, remember, I said I'm not telling you what you should do, and I'm really not. Any of these options might be the right option for anyone listening. Whether they're the right option for you or not, we don't know yet. Okay. So that longer term loan can seem really scary. I'm going to take out a loan for $28,000, and it's going to be for 7 years, and I'm going to make this payment. But ironically, it can work in your favor. It can work in your favor. I'll get to how, but let's first go over a little bit of math on it. Now, it's always hard to do math on the air because, many people just bristle at the thought of math. But it's necessary in this case, I think, and I'll go slowly, and I think everyone will get this concept.
Okay.
Let's say that you're deciding between a $28,000 new car with a 7-year loan, and the rate is 5.9%. Okay, so that's going to give you a monthly payment of $407.70. Call it 400 bucks for ease of figuring. Okay,
Okay.
or a $16,000 used car with a 5-year loan at 7.5%. These are pretty typical numbers. Okay.
Okay.
So, more expensive new car, longer loan, lower interest. Less expensive used car, shorter loan, higher interest. Okay. Start to feel where I'm going here. All right. The used car is cheaper up front, right? 16,000 versus 28,000. But not by that much in a month-to-month payment, because your used car payment is about $320,
Okay.
$321 to be exact. So $320 for the used car, $407 for the new car. All right, that's not the win. But I just want to point out that because of the terms of these loans, that's the beginning of what makes the difference. Okay, here's the key. In real life, your car payment doesn't exist in a vacuum, right? Most people make these decisions like it was their decisions about debt, right? Like checkers versus chess, okay? So most people have credit cards, student loans, mortgages, other things. Yet they're deciding about their car as a one-off. Isolated, we say, which car decision do we make? In fact, that's where the real opportunity lies. That's what we do for a living, right? Is to turn that checker game into a chess game.
Okay.
It's, instead of treating your debt like you're jumping checker pieces, instead of that, we're working it like a chess game. We're looking out 5, 10, 15, 20 moves ahead. How will this affect your overall picture? Because we don't tell you what kind of car to buy. I don't want to tell somebody what kind of car to buy, right? But we do help you see how that fits into your entire financial picture. Let's say your total monthly debt payments are $3,000 a month.
Okay.
Okay, including your new car, all your debts, including your new car. If our algorithm helps you pay off all your debt 6 months faster, which it would, because at some point the car becomes a priority debt and gets what we call margin, that's the money you have because you paid off some debts already, and speeds up everything behind it. If our plan helps you pay that off 6 months earlier, $3,000 a month in payments, 6 months savings is 18 grand. That's what you're avoiding in payments.
Right.
That means that $28,000 car, just by utilizing our system, as long as that $400 payment is affordable for you, all of the things that we help you look for, right? That means you've saved $18,000. That means that might feel like a $10,000 car to you in hindsight, in real life impact. All right, it's always difficult to try to explain the math to people without just saying, look, it's different. That's why we have a patent. Okay.
Right,
You're going to have to
exactly.
trust me on this and go to the website, just plug in your numbers, hit the button, and you will see without
Right.
talking to a person whether what I'm telling you is true or not and where those loans land. Okay. Buying a car is never. It's never about just buying a car, right? We think it is.
Yeah,
It's
there's more to
really,
it.
yeah, it's really about your future, right? And with HUG, it's this, we call it HUG instead of Hug Your Money for short. So with HUG, it's just making smart vehicle decisions. I promised to let you talk about your sister and you, and what's the argument? Tell me that.
Oh, just really quick. My car's got about 145,000 miles on it right now. And but I paid it off last year. So I've had like a year of no payments. She thinks I'm rolling the dice every time I drive it because a big repair could come up. And I say, well, sure it could, but I've saved a year's worth of payments. So that's where we are.
I don't want to get a family fight started here. But yeah, the truth is, I think when, so here's the caveat from me. When you say I've saved a year's worth of payments, have you just stopped making the payments and absorbed it into everyday expenses, or are you actually stashing those payments into an account?
Oh, that's so funny, Dr. Francis.
Why?
I mean, have you met the kids? Of course, I'm spending
Okay. Well, again, how to win the game. Both you and your sister have a point. Okay. I wouldn't say either one of you is right. I would lean more heavily towards
but
more thinking.
you could if you wanted to. Go ahead.
Well, I know that you have this sparring thing with her, but I would lean more heavily toward your camp in that you are able to, buying a car because something might come up is not. At 140,000, you're getting up there, but it's certainly not on its last legs unless it's been treated really badly, right? I mean, the guy I just talked to had 240,000 on his vehicle, and he went for a repair and, drove off the, tried to drive it out, and there was another major problem, and he was like, okay, I got to do this, and it was major. But at 140,000, maintain it, drive it if you like the car, but. Do what we're telling you to do, Jess. If you were in our portal, that money would have been recommended to go to the next debt, and that debt would then get paid off faster and faster. And
All joking aside, I've used it to pay off some credit cards and stuff.
thank you. Okay,
I
so
have.
that's the thing to do is that oh, I don't want to, that's up to you to say, not for me to say on the air. So if you were saving these payments into a side fund for the next down payment on the next car, it's not too late to start that, by the way, Jess. Pretend that you're still making that payment. I don't care if you have to automate it in your account to go out of your checking account into that side fund for the car. Fine. Even if all it does is pay for your repairs, that's worth doing.
All right. Well, what I've got from this is that I'm right, my sister's wrong. So thank you very much. I'll let her know that the money doctor said so.
Oh, yeah, I can't wait for that phone call.
I mean, I think we need a part two of this conversation because we're out of time, but really good tips. Any last thoughts on this?
Yeah, read the fine print. Don't buy with your heart. Walk away from the dealer for a moment. I don't care if you have to go have lunch, whatever. Make a phone call, get on our website, do whatever you got to do to get the information you need. This is a big decision and you want to make it wisely and enjoy driving that new vehicle and not be driving it around thinking, "Oh, what have I done?"
All right, let's get your phone number.
Sure, 413-773-3333.
And you can always go to hugyourmoney.com. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Jess.
Underwritten by Hug Your Money. Hug Your Money, where financial wellness gets personal.